Hello and welcome to Nolan Me, Nolan You, a limited series podcast that celebrates the work of writer and director Christopher Nolan. I'm your host, Emily Murray, and today I'm joined by film journalist Tom Beasley for a very special episode as we review his highly anticipated movie Tenet. Spoiler free, of course. But first, here's a clip.
All I have for you is a word. Tenet. It'll open the right doors. Some of the wrong ones, too. Use it carefully.
Hello, Tom, and welcome to Nolan Me, Nolan You again.
Yes, I'm back.
You're back.
I'm back. You got rid of me for a bit, but now I'm back.
You are back. I suppose if you haven't listened to the Inception episode yet, but I would recommend you do because it's a wonderful episode. Just want to introduce yourself to people, Tom.
Yes, so my name is Tom Beasley. I am a freelance film journalist, critic, podcaster, all of those sort of things. I write for outlets like Yahoo Movies, Flickering Myth, Gizmodo, sometimes The Guardian, Polygon, The Ringer, lots of people. And yes, a previous guest on this podcast discussing the wonders of Inception.
The wonders of Inception, yes. But today we are discussing, well,
trying to discuss.
Trying to discuss, yes. So I suppose I'm going to use a quote for the film. All I have for you is a word, Tom. Tenet. Because we were very lucky to have seen it at the press screening earlier this week at the beautiful BFI IMAX, which I've never been to before, by the way.
Oh, it's wonderful, isn't it? It's so good. The only problem I have is that it, you know, really does my lungs in going up all those stairs.
There's so many flights of stairs, and I don't know if it is a lift, but if it wasn't, if we weren't allowed to use it, probably because of health and safety. But I've never been there. I've always, I'm quite lucky in Manchester, we have a really big IMAX here. But obviously the BFI one is the, I think it's the biggest in the UK.
Yes, as far as I know. As far as I know.
Sounds about right. Yep. Yeah, so obviously seeing Nolan's new film at BFI IMAX was just beautiful. But me and Tom were chatting earlier about how we're going to talk about this movie. because it's really like, it's so hard to keep it spoiler free. We will keep it spoiler free, but it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, it just means that it might not be the most exciting discussion you've ever heard.
but yeah, these are Nolan fans listening. They want to know what it's like. So and we have quite different views as well, which I think is good.
Yes.
So we can have a bit of a debate. So I think we'll start with your initial thoughts.
Well, I mean, my initial thought, and I think everyone will say exactly the same about this, is that I was just really glad to be back in a cinema. And I think yours was the same as mine. The last film I saw in a cinema was The Hunt.
Oh, it was, yeah.
And so, like, from The Hunt to Tenet, it could not be further apart in terms of quality of cinema, really. And, you know, like, the opening of this movie is this big, propulsive action sequence. It's loud, it's fast, it's energetic, it's spectacular. And, like, within 10 minutes, I was just like, I'm so happy to be back. So, like, to get that out of the way to begin with, because I think I think anyone who's reviewing this film, and you will likely have read some reviews by the time you listen to this podcast, I think anyone reviewing it, it's impossible to divorce it from that context.
Yeah, it will be, I had exactly the same experience.
Yeah.
Welled up.
It will be interesting to see how people react to this film when they revisit it in 6 months. Because it's really, for me, and I think for a lot of people, completely wedded to that experience of not having been in a cinema for at least sort of 5 months.
Yeah.
And so with all of that said, I think it's a really interesting movie, and listeners to this podcast obviously will have been through the entire oeuvre of Mr. Nolan now.
We are well acquainted.
Yes, and so you'll know kind of what to expect, that, you know, he's just the cleverest man in the room, and so he's always 5 steps ahead of wherever you are. And, you know, at times that's endearing, and at times it's infuriating, and both of those elements are present in Tenet. if you sat me down and asked me to explain the plot of this film, which thankfully we're not doing in this podcast, but if
we're not talking about the plot, no, but if you were, God,
but if you were to sit me down and ask me to do it, I couldn't do it anyway. So, because it's, I think it's perhaps one of the more complex of Nolan's films, because
I would argue his most complex.
Yeah, and I think it's because the central idea is so knotty and so inherently difficult. Because, like, time is something that we don't understand. And so anything that plays with time is going to immediately hurt the heads of everyone. There's a line really early on in the movie that the Clemence Posey character says, where she's trying to explain some of what's happening to the protagonist, John David Washington. And she just says, don't understand it, feel it. And I kind of think that that's what Nolan's saying. And it's kind of bold for a director as emotionless as Christopher Nolan to tell me to feel something. But... but I get the point he was making, because I was able to enjoy this movie as much as I did, and I did enjoy it a considerable amount, despite the fact I didn't really follow what was going on.
And I completely agree.
And I think that's a testament to the visual invention of it, the quality of the action set pieces, the charisma of the performers. I think all of that stuff comes together, along with the fact that, like, everyone knows about Christopher Nolan, that he's an enormous James Bond fan, and there's so much James Bond in this movie. It's a big, globe-trotting espionage story, first and foremost, and he kind of grafts on all of the time stuff to that framework. And so even if you're not following the time stuff, which, unless you're very clever or a theoretical physicist, you probably won't be, even if you can't follow any of that, the bones of it are just a really, really rollicking spy movie. And even if you just enjoy it on that level, you're going to have a good time, especially with that context we've just discussed about how you're so happy to be back in a cinema.
Yeah, I completely agree. It is wedded to being back in cinema. But I do think I would have been blown away anyways, no matter what point I would have seen it. I completely agree with you. The emphasis is on feeling it. Like, he just says to you, sit back, relax, just go with it. And the story is incredibly complicated.
Yeah, it's like, so, like, someone more cynical might say that it's the equivalent of, I think it's the second of the Austin Powers movies, where Austin asks Basil Exposition to explain the time travel. And Basil just says something along the lines of, oh, I wouldn't worry about that. And then he turns to the camera and says, and that goes for you too. I think that's kind of where Nolan is here.
There is a point where one of the characters is explaining the stuff, I'm going to call it the stuff, to another character, and he just cut away when he starts explaining. So I do feel like that is the point. But I really am not bothered that I didn't fully understand it, because I was so entranced and gripped and thrilled by what was happening on screen. And even in my head, part of me was like, I don't know how we got to this point, or is not fully making sense. Like, I didn't mind. And then after the credits had rolled, I spent a good, like, several hours piecing it together in my brain. And I do think, by the way, it could have done a bit more clarity. Just so I could have pieced together how we got from sequence to sequence. But it doesn't bother me that much. I kind of like that it was a mystery. Like, I'm there to enjoy this ride, like, rather than worry about the physics of it. If that makes sense.
I think that's it. And I think one of the things that the reason I enjoyed this a lot more than, say, Interstellar, which I think we discussed when I was last on, that I really don't like Interstellar. Yeah. And I think one of the reasons that I liked this more than I liked Interstellar is that every moment I was watching Tenet, I was 100% confident that Christopher Nolan and his script understood it.
Oh, yeah.
I thought they knew what was going on. And so I felt like I was in safe hands. Mm. And so I wasn't bothered that I didn't understand what was happening, because I was, you know, I was so confident that someone did.
Yeah.
It's like if you're on a plane, you're able to relax on a plane because you know that the pilot knows exactly what he's doing. Mm. You don't know how to fly a plane, but you know that that guy does.
It's a very good analogy.
And that's kind of how I felt watching Tenet. Mm.
And I think if I, like, I want to see it a second time to properly form my opinion on the story, but I think if I really, like, tried piecing it all together properly after a second viewing, I think it would be completely coherent. Even if I was a bit like, what's going on now? How do we get to this point? But again, like, those questions, if they popped into my head, it was for a millisecond during the film, because it also moves at such breakneck speed. Like, it's 2.5 hours flies by. It's so fast paced.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think because it's so fast, to an extent, I'm not sure it cares about you understanding it. And I think so. Like, I love Inception. We talked about it at length on the other episode I was on. But I think Inception really wants you to understand.
Yeah.
There's lots of exposition in Inception. There's lots of characters explaining what's happening.
Isn't much they about do, Tenet.
Yeah, they do lay it out for you, I think. But I don't think that happens in Tenet. I think it just pushes the gas pedal and just sort of dares you to keep up. And as I said, you know, the fact that you're not keeping up doesn't really seem to matter that much because it is so enjoyable. And as you said, it moves at such a clip. It's quite disarming because so all of the trickery is there from the start. The themes are present in the background. Mm. But for the first kind of half of the film, it is quite a conventional spy story.
Exactly. I remember thinking, we got about 45 minutes in, I was like, I don't really have much in time inversion stuff. Let's have it. But then it sort of went, have it all, Emily.
Yeah, they introduce it to you at the beginning and then they sort of let it sit there in the background.
Mm. Which
and
I liked, by the way. I did like
and
that.
And there's a scene halfway through where something happens that changes the temporal context of the film. And from that point on, it's like, as you said, have all of it. Have all of the time inversion. Have all of the weirdness. Keep up if you can. And yeah, I kind of like that about it. Mm. It does mean that you're a little bit all at sea for the last kind of hour of the movie. But also, like, it's a 2.5 hour movie. And it does not feel like that.
No, the pacing is so spot on.
Yeah.
I also really like the Bond stuff, by the way. I know you mentioned it earlier, but for a lot of people, Inception is Christopher Nolan's Bond film. Like, it's no secret he's a huge Bond fan, but this really is his Bond movie. Like, the protagonist, John David Washington's character, is essentially like a kind of 007 figure. Like, there's so much deception and secret missions and, like, different agendas and a lot of torture, which obviously is quite present in Bond movies. But also, as you said, the glamorous locations, this sort of luxury feel about it as well. Like, it is so Bond. But, like, as a Bond fan myself, like, I'm really into that.
Absolutely. I like you, I'm a big Bond fan, and so I really appreciated that. The thing that's most Bond that it does is it does that thing of a scene ends, they cut, and suddenly they're in another country. That's very Bond to do that, you know. It's like, we don't need to see Bond travelling. We'll just have him at the next place.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, Tenet does that so often. And it is so enjoyable. And the locales are so well used. Like, it's almost all location filming.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, there's something beautiful about that. And, you know, as I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, it's so practical, this movie. Mm. There were some quotes during the rounds, I think, a couple of weeks ago, where someone involved with the film was saying there's less CGI in Tenet than there is in most rom-coms.
Yep, so true.
And you feel that because it feels practical, it feels tactile, and that's something Nolan has always been great at. But I think the action he does in this film raises the bar from the action he's done before.
I completely agree.
Like, I didn't love every element of this movie, but when it got the action going, I was just spellbound.
Yeah.
That opening scene I mentioned is wonderful. There's one of the most unique car chases I've ever seen, and I loved every moment of that. There's a scene of hand-to-hand fighting which has elements of body horror, and I just adored that. Mm. I wasn't expecting it, and I was fascinated by it. And so I really loved the action, and I love the practicality of it.
I completely agree. Like, tactile is a perfect word. And with the action, it is like, because we can't talk about it, because of the context of what's happening in the film, there is a different spin put on the fighting sequences and the way that the action is filmed, etc. And it is just absolutely stunning to look at and so gripping. And I think when we did our Batman Begins podcast with my friend Cameron Frew, he said that one of his main complaints about Chris Nolan is how he films action, except for Inception. And I literally was sorry that was in my mind whilst watching this movie, but I didn't find that at all. I thought it was just very unique. I know you feel the same way, that the last action scene was a bit messy.
yes, the last action scene, without going into specifics, is a little bit Call of Duty.
Okay, yeah.
And so I think what it is it's... So there's trickery in there, but it is on its most basic level just a big sort of shoot-em-up. And it's not coherent enough. There's lots of people wearing the same clothes. I was talking about it the other day, and I compared it to... this is a strange comparison for Tenet, but bear with me.
Okay.
it felt like the most recent of the Has Fallen films with Gerard Butler, Angel Has Fallen. Every set piece in Angel Has Fallen is three different groups of people, all in identical black tactical vests, shooting at each other. And so you don't know who you're supposed to be.
Especially when they're wearing camouflage.
Yeah. You don't know whose side you're supposed to be on, what you're watching. And then you're trying to keep on track of everything that Nolan's doing at the same time. Mm. There are moments within that scene. There's a shot of a building exploding. I won't say any more than that.
That's such a good moment.
Which is stunning. Aww. I don't understand that either, but it was it was visually incredible.
I think with you, like, I think there is obviously the trickery that we mentioned that we can't talk about, but it's present in the action, is there in the final scene, but I think it's less refined.
Yes.
Mainly because there's just so many people involved, which isn't a spoiler, I mean, because if it's the final battle of a big action movie, come on, like, that's just going to happen. Yeah. But I think it was just less refined than earlier fight sequences. There is one fight sequence, I'm just going to say, in a hallway, and it's just, like, mind-blowing. Like, the choreography on that was perfection, in my opinion.
Absolutely. It's so... The thing that's wonderful about it, and that's why I mentioned body horror, is because as you're watching it, you can just see that it's wrong. You can see that it's strange. There's something about it that's not quite right. And I could only imagine the difficulty of shooting that.
Yeah.
On screen, it's enthralling, because you know, we've seen fights so many times. We've seen really conventional fights. We've seen incredible modern fight stuff, like in the John Wick films. And you know, things like Atomic Blonde that are kind of the same ilk as that, but this is something completely different.
So new.
And and you know, I thought already that we were in a kind of golden age for hand-to-hand fighting on screen, and so for someone to do something that feels as different as this does, I thought was really compelling.
There's only one comparison that's just popped into my head about the fighting sequences, but I'm not going to say what it is because I think, like, it will be a spoiler, but I'm going to tell you after the podcast, Tom.
All right, I look forward to that.
I'll do it in a spoiler special, but it just popped into my head. I was like, that's literally what it is. But, you know, as you said, like, it is so visually stunning and so enthralling and so fresh and unique. Like, I really didn't mind that I didn't fully understand what was going on. Maybe, I do think it's a type of a person you are that I don't really care if I understand it all. I don't need to. I know, like, this film has been quite divisive amongst, like, critics, like, from people I've spoken to. Like, I know I feel quite differently to you, but I think some people are a bit like, I don't like films that make me feel dumb, but I didn't find that.
I think that's a really, really interesting point, because
some people have said that to me about Tenet,
because I think there's a difference between you not understanding a film and a film making you feel dumb.
Yeah.
So I have no problem holding my hands up and saying that for most of Tenet, I was really confused and did not get it.
But I
never felt like talked down to by the movie, because I don't think the movie's trying to be all highfalutin and pretentious about it. The movie's just trying to tell you a really engaging spy story.
Yeah, and they literally say that as well. And don't try to understand it, feel it.
Exactly, and so I was totally okay with that. Whereas you compare it to one of the most annoying film experiences I had in recent years, which was The Big Short.
Oh, I hate The Big Short.
Where?
Do you also hate The Big Short? Please, yeah. Yay! Yeah. I've not met someone who's hated it.
It's not only do I not understand The Big Short, because I'm not an economist, and I find economics at the best of times head-scratchingly complicated, but not only was it difficult to understand, which I expected, because as I said, I don't get economics, so I expected it to be difficult, but I felt like the movie thought I was stupid for not following it.
Smug.
And I never got that with Tenet. Tenet is never smug. And I think that's something that kind of runs through Nolan's filmography. Mm. He's never worried about being a popcorn entertainer. In fact, the opposite. He relishes the fact he's a popcorn entertainer. One of the things that's most unique about him as a filmmaker is that he's a popcorn entertainer and one of the most cerebral filmmakers we have. Mm. The fact that he's able to do both of those things is the thing that makes him so fascinating to people and is the reason you could do a whole podcast series just about his films.
Exactly. Which is what I did. Yeah, I completely agree. I think... also, like, this is another point, is I quite liked then chatting to different people about their different interpretations of what was going on and trying to figure it out. Like, we were kind of trying to solve a mystery. I thought that was really fun. Maybe that's just me.
You see, again, I think that's where we differ, because I don't have a perspective.
Okay.
Maybe when I watch it again, I might have more of a perspective on how it all works. But at the moment, I don't. And I think what happened was that once I realised I didn't understand it, I just stopped trying to understand it.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think I had a more rewarding experience because of it. It made certain elements of it frustrating. You know, it made some of the stuff down the stretch a bit difficult, and that action sequence we talked about, which is a bit of a sticking point.
Mess. Yeah.
Yeah. That's I think that's probably an incredibly ambitious and brilliant scene if you know everything that's going on. And so because I didn't, it wasn't. But yeah, I didn't mind not understanding it because I sort of made the decision not to and just sort of relaxed and enjoyed it. And I think that happened, the time that happened to me before is when I watched Inherent Vice, the Paul Thomas Anderson film.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
That's this detective story. And I think it's deliberately loopy and strange. And so there are two ways to watch it. And I watched it with a friend of mine, and I came out of it and I said to my friend, did you follow that? And he said, yes, I tried really hard to follow it and I think I just about understand it and I had a great time.
Yeah.
And he turned to me and I said, well, that's really funny because I gave up trying to understand it, but I also had a really great time.
Yeah. See, I think I had a really great time, I chose not to try and understand it. But then also, I also had fun trying to understand it after. Does that make sense? So yeah, I had my cake and ate it. I had both.
I think it does. And I don't know if maybe that's one of the things we've lost, given that, you know, these press screenings were so controlled and you couldn't stand outside with 20 people afterwards and discuss it, which is what we normally do after a film.
Yeah, my boyfriend's also a film critic, so he was there for his outlet. So we went for dinner after and just spent all dinner trying to be like, you know, like figure it out and discuss it. So I think that was a benefit, I suppose, which helped me in that respect.
Yeah, I think so. But yes, I think that when I watch it again, which I will, I don't know how soon it will be. Sometimes I think about it, like, so it's been 3 days since I've seen it, and sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, I need to see this as soon as it opens, and I need to go in, and I need to come out with a big perspective on how it all works, I need to unravel the secrets of Tenet, whereas other times I'm like, I'm probably okay with not seeing it for a month or two, and then I'll go back to it, and it'll feel kind of fresh, and I'll be able to divorce it from what we talked about earlier, the unavoidable context of it being this return to cinemas. And I'll just be able to sort of look at it on its own terms as a fairly complicated Christopher Nolan film.
It is definitely his most ambitious and complicated project yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it again and going again opening day, because I would have my tickets booked, so why not? And I think I will try and understand it more, but just so I can maybe follow the action better, if that makes sense. But I like the sort of mystery weirdness. Our friend Clarice, who did the Dunkirk podcast, described it as quite Lynchian, which I thought was really good. Way of describing it. Because it is weird. It gets weird.
It does. It does get weird. And I think that's sort of the element that I liked. Those darker corners of it, the kind of nightmarish corners of it. To come back to the body horror thing. Again, these sort of strange, almost Cronenbergian action scenes. And that stuff, and as Clarice said, the sort of Lynchian nightmare elements of it definitely come through. And I liked that because it felt like a filmmaker not shying away from the weirdness of the concept.
Yeah.
So if you watch, for example, something like some of the Stephen Moffat era of Doctor Who, where they were really, really playing with the notion of time and of paradoxes and of really loopy, weird time travel.
What's it called? Timey-wimey.
Yeah, exactly. Timey-wimey stuff. Wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
That's it, yeah. When
they were really going into that, all the stuff with River Song and those, like, three series finales in a row that were impossible to understand. when they were doing that, it felt like because they were such a family show, they had to really shy away from the inherent gruesomeness of time.
Yeah, because it is gruesome.
It is. Like, you think of Looper. There's that brilliant scene in Looper of the guy sort of gradually disappearing as he's erased from time, which is just so cleverly done, but also so grim and so, like, dark. And there is some of that in Tenet, and I really appreciated that about it.
It really made me feel uncomfortable at times. But in it, not like in a bad way, like in a good way, because of the themes, like the dark themes it was tackling. And not just the time stuff, but there's like quite a dark theme when it comes to the Elizabeth Debicki character as well.
I don't think I'll ever be able to see Kenneth Branagh in a friendly light again.
So evil.
Oh my God.
Very, very good performance. But I Kenneth Branagh scares me, which is never a statement I thought I'd say. So
the thing about his performance in this, without going into any details,
is to say he's evil. He's just evil. He's a horrible man.
Yeah, when someone plays evil, they tend to do one of two things. They either go big and loud and shouty and spitty, or they go disarmingly and unsettlingly calm. He does both.
Yeah,
Kenneth Branagh does both of those things in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I was so terrified of him.
I was terrified of him and very disturbed as well. As we're not going to talk about the themes, but those themes surrounding, you know, him and Elizabeth Debicki's character did make me feel uncomfortable. As I said, and it was handled very well, I thought. So it was a bit like, it's meant to make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think to an extent that stuff was handled well. I do think Nolan struggles with women.
I think this is his best female character yet.
I think there's an argument for that. I think a lot of it is because Elizabeth Debicki is wonderful.
Oh, she's so good.
I think she's fantastic in this film. I think she takes the material and elevates it shoulder high. And because she's 6'6", that shoulder's pretty high.
Not just 6'6". She wears a lot of heels in this movie. And she is allowed to be tall.
Yeah. So I think, especially
when you see it in IMAX.
Yeah. So there was probably 50% of the time I was like, I'm really impressed with how they're handling this character. And then another 50% of the time I was like, yeah, that's not quite... No, not quite there. And so I really kind of went back and forth on that character.
Interesting.
I really wasn't sure where I sat, but I was sure that she was brilliant.
Yeah. See, I think her arc is my favourite arc in the movie. Storyline. She's my favourite. Like, I think it was very affecting. I found myself really emotionally connected with it because her, as I always say, with Christopher Nolan, he's a big softie. And really, it's just an emotional story tied up in all this time physics, whatever else is going on, nonsense. And I don't think it had as much heart as Interstellar or Inception or as other movies, but her character is the beating heart of the movie and the emotional driving force, and I really connected with that, but I know others didn't.
I would just like to bring up something that I feel is very important, which is, this is a massive, spectacular, globe-trotting, espionage, sci-fi epic from one of the finest filmmakers this country has ever created, featuring mind-bending physics, featuring enormous action sequences, featuring a character known only as the protagonist, featuring his best friend, Neil.
I knew you were Neil. And the thing is with Neil... Which is Robert Pattinson's character. Robert Pattinson, who, by the way, is now like hot boy number one for me after I've seen Tenet. Good Lord. Robert Pattinson in a suit when he's playing Neil. It's just, I haven't got a problem with the name Neil, by the way. It's just that, like, it is quite a common name, and Robert Pattinson's like this really mysterious, like sensual, like alluring character, and he's just called Neil.
I think the problem is it's not a sexy name.
That's it. And he's a really sexy character. And he's meant to be as well.
Yeah, he's very sexy.
He's like, I'd call him the Eames of this, which is what I thought he would be. Just call him Eames or something like it.
That's the correct comparison. He is very much the Eames of this. And
he's so good, isn't it?
I found it so funny. Neil. The fact that he's just called Neil. I think it would be less weird if he had a surname, but because he doesn't have a surname, it's just like...
And also, like, they yell his name quite a bit in different scenes.
Yes.
And it's just like, Neil! Neil!
It is. You just expect some bloke in, like, plasterers jeans covered in, like, to walk out. Not Robert Pattinson looking sexy in a suit.
Exactly. With a little scarf. Scarf as well. I think Robert Pattinson is so good in this movie. Because he's just so, like, alluring and charming. But, like, he's got, like, this really, like, edge to him as well. Like, quite raw.
Mm.
And I'm so excited now to see him as Batman. Like, I already was, obviously.
Yeah, he's having all sorts of fun, I think, as well, which really comes through. Because, like, you know, I am kinder to the Twilight films than most. But you can sort of tell that Robert Pattinson is not enjoying himself.
He admits he's not into it.
Whereas when you watch this, you're like, he is just loving this job every single day he's doing it.
He's having so much fun. Yeah, I got that. Yeah. And it's a really, I think him and, this is John David Washington's show, and there's no taking away from the fact that he is the protagonist, as I keep emphasising in the movie. Like, he is just outstanding. But I also really like the dynamic between him and Neil. I think they're such a good pairing. In fact, all the performances are great. Evil Kenneth Branagh, Elizabeth Debicki just being fantastic. But yeah, John David Washington's just really, really good as well. He's just very, like, cool, calm, collected, but again, like, a bit like Robert Pattinson's character, there is an edge to him.
Yeah, I think the edge to his character in particular is really interesting because he's sort of positioned as, like, our way into the story.
Yeah.
Like, he's our way into this world. But then, like, the more time you spend with him, the more, like, inscrutable and strange he becomes.
Mm.
And, you know, you find yourself questioning everything. You find yourself questioning who he is, who Neil is, who all of the characters are, who Branagh is, who Debicki is. You're never, like, entirely comfortable in who the characters are. And I think that's a benefit. I think
I
that's
completely
really
agree.
Mm. Intriguing and compelling. And it's not like... I think this is actually, you know, one area where it surpasses Inception is that in Inception the Marion Cotillard character is literally a puzzle. She's not a person, she's a puzzle. And I think that Tenet gets past that. I don't think these characters feel like puzzles. You're trying to work them out, but I don't think, like, they feel like people first and foremost. And I think that's the thing that he gets right with the way he's drawn these characters.
Yeah, I think you're trying to work them out because, as we said earlier, it's a Bond movie. All these characters have secret agendas, and I think you're trying to uncover what that is.
Yes.
Like, who are they like? Because I'm like, if I go in and I'm immediately presented with a very Bond-like film, I'm like, who's the Dwayne? What's this person got to do? Where is the secret villain in this? Do you know what I mean? I've got all these questions in my head. So then, because that's very much present, and Nolan's playing to those tropes, that's what I'm then trying to figure out. Who is the protagonist? Especially when he's called the bloody protagonist, man. Like,
yeah.
He's not even given a name, which I like. That's basically Bond, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's fascinating because I think that in so many Nolan films, and I think it's true to an extent of Tenet, that it's the style and the energy and the level of craft that makes the shortcomings easier to swallow.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of true with Tenet. You know, because you've got the Ludwig Göransson score, which is just
so good.
Oh, it's wonderful. You know, he worked closely with Nolan throughout the whole process of making the film. It wasn't that he came on later, and that, you know, you really feel, and you know, you've got the absolutely, again, absolutely stunning cinematography. You know, back with Hoyt van Hoytema again, who's such an incredible cinematographer, so the look of it is great. Everyone on the stunt team deserves all of the credit in the world because those scenes must have been so complicated.
Think about how they started up those scenes, good lord, especially without any CGI.
And you know, this is a sort of pretentious, like, film prick thing to say, but it did look incredible on 70mm IMAX.
Yeah, I'm really grateful I managed to see it in 70mm because they only showed it in digital IMAX in Manchester. Even though they can show on film, because I saw Dunkirk in 70mm IMAX in Manchester. But yeah, I think it's a sensory overload. It's because there's so much, like, the plot and then the cinematography and the soundtrack, and they, as they say, it really is about feeling it. Like, it is an experience to feel as well as just watch, if that makes any... That also sounds like a really prickish thing to say.
Yeah, no, I wrote in my review with the, and it's a very crude thing to say, but I just wrote that it's like being punched in the face by cinema.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that, like, that's what it is.
You had it, you've got a very simple angle in your review to be.
and so I just wonder, like, it does make me wonder how I'd receive it if I wasn't, you know, in a cinema for the first time in 5 months.
Yeah.
But that is kind of Nolan in a nutshell, is, you know, he's a man so in love with cinema as an idea that he, you know, uses all of the tools in the toolbox. It feels like every film he makes, he puts everything into. It's not like he's keeping his powder dry for another film. Like, every film he makes could be the last film he makes.
Yeah. Also, I'd rather have something like this that is so ambitious, so original, so, like, trying so many different new things that is a bit flawed. Like, I do have a few, like, reservations about it. You know, rather than, like, a really solid, like, action movie that I've seen many times before and is, like, great. Does that make sense in any way?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you do want, like, you know, we've both reviewed a lot of films that I imagine we thought were fine.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more depressing as a, you know, as a film critic. You know, everyone thinks film critics like writing the horrible reviews, and we do. And we also like writing the reviews where we're really excited about a film. We've got a lot
to
say.
It's fine, it's the worst.
But those reviews in the middle are so hard to write because you just don't care.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's possible to feel that about a Christopher Nolan film. I feel like you're always going to have an opinion coming out of it.
But even if it was like, I saw like a 5-star action movie that was just amazing, but like it didn't really do anything new, I'd still rather like have something like Tenet, which is a bit messy, but it's really pushing boundaries. Because that is exactly what it's doing. It's really, really pushing boundaries. That's what Nolan always does. I'm just glad that he's still staying true to himself. In fact, even more so now, because it is definitely his most complex film yet.
Neil. He's called Neil. Why is the guy called Neil?
I don't understand. Also, like, Sir Michael Caine playing Sir Michael. I think this is Nolan just having a bit of a laugh, though, with us.
Yeah.
And I also really like there's some one-liners in this movie, man, that got me giggling, especially from John David Washington.
Yeah, I think, I'm, you know, Nolan and comedy is a bit of a weird thing for me. Like, it feels like, it's sometimes, when you're watching Christopher Nolan's scripts be funny, it sometimes feels like he's gone, well, I need to write a joke to put in this scene. This will do. This is a bit of comedy. And like, some of the jokes in Tenet feel a little bit like that. It's a little bit looser than some of his films on that front. Like, you know, Inception's got maybe 2 or 3 lines that are actually funny. This has more.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there is a flavour of, I think a human would do funny now, so I must try do funny now.
I don't think that. I think it comes across naturally, but obviously I would say that. So I think it'd be interesting to see how audiences who aren't too used to Nolan, because this is the most Nolan known has ever been, will react to it. I think it's the perfect movie to come back to in regards to opening back cinemas, because, as you said, it is being like punched in the face by cinema. But I think it just might be a bit too complex for a lot of people.
Yeah. And it did, like, you know, there were elements, you know, as much as I said that I wasn't too bothered by my struggles to understand it, there were elements where I went, well, I'm just kind of, I've a little bit checked out of this scene because I'm not following it. And so there were bits like that kind of scattered throughout it. And as I said, it did kind of turn me off that climactic action scene. And I think there will be some of that in the way it's received. I think quite a bit of the reception to this will be coloured by the fact that people are back in cinemas for the first time, audiences as well as critics. Even if you have already been back to watch, I don't know, Empire Strikes Back or the Inception re-release, for example, even if you have been back to watch those things, there's something special about watching something new at the cinema. And even if you've been back to watch Unhinged or American Pickle or, you know, something like Baby Teeth or the weird new Pinocchio film, even if you've been to watch those new films, there's something about this is a proper summer blockbuster, and we haven't had one of those this year. So that, I think, will colour a lot of people's reception to it. I do think people will be more frustrated than we have been by not understanding it. I think because, you know, for various reasons, I wasn't bothered too much about not understanding it. And people who are fans of Nolan, I don't think will be that bothered about not understanding it. Because they'll have no problem, you know, going back to it and analysing it again. Like you said, you know, going to see it again and then having a conversation with someone where you pick it apart and you all put forward your theories and you piece them all together and come up with an idea. But for, you know, like, my barometer is always, and I think about this with Netflix films as well, my barometer is always, what do I think my mum would think of it?
Interesting. See, I was thinking like, this as well, because my dad's a huge Nolan fan. So I texted my initial thoughts, because he's the one who introduced me to Nolan. He said, replied with, complex, I like that a lot. Because I think if I said to my mum, she'd be like, don't want to see that.
Yeah, so my mum doesn't really care about movies at all. Her movie watching is what's on Netflix or what's on Sky Cinema this weekend. And so that's why, like, I always apply that to Netflix films, because I'm like, if Netflix buys something, my first thought is, would my mum like it? And if not, why have Netflix bothered to buy it? Because I assume the Netflix audience is everyone's mum. And so when Netflix bought Roma, for example, I saw Roma at London Film Festival and really liked it.
Beautiful film.
But there is literally no way on God's green earth that my mother would watch that film.
Yeah.
She might watch 10 minutes of it, and she'd go, well, I could deal with it being either black and white or in a foreign language or slow, but not all three of those things.
I think it was, no, I remember it's boring. I don't think it's boring at all, but I can see why people would call it boring.
Yeah, it's not boring, but it is slow.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah.
And so I think maybe Tenet might have that factor for some people, but I think, you know, if you're risking a trip to the cinema in the middle of a global pandemic, at least part of you is going to care about this. And I don't think that... I think if you're seeing Tenet, you've probably seen Inception. And you might have seen one or two of the other Nolan films. Like, you might have seen Dunkirk, which has, obviously, its
time structures.
And the Batman ones. You'll have seen the Batman ones. Like, everyone will have seen those. And I think if you've seen those, there's going to be enough in Tenet that you're not completely put off.
Yeah. That is a good point. My only counter argument, I suppose, is when I was at the BFI IMAX yesterday for the press screening, a family turned up to go see a film, and the woman was like, well, it's closed, the cinema's closed, and they just had no idea. So I do think there are people who are just going to the cinema without a clue of what they're going to go see, who probably will walk into Tenet and be like, what on earth was that?
Oh, you see, that absolutely baffles me.
Baffled me too, Tom.
And I don't know if it's just because, like, we were talking before we started recording, that I'm still really anxious about this whole situation. I struggle with, like, going to anywhere where there's people. And so, it took a lot for me to go and see this film. And, you know, I have to tip my hat to everyone at the BFI IMAX, who I thought were wonderful,
really wonderful.
And made me feel very, very, very safe. So hats off to them. But I struggle with the idea that there are people just wandering into cinemas at the moment.
And a family as well. I was just like what?
But I think, you know, the vast majority of people who are going to the cinema at the moment are going there with a reason.
Yeah.
Whether it's because a film they've always loved but never seen on the big screen is now on the big screen. So I know people who've been to see, like, Jurassic Park, for example, because they've never seen it on the big screen before. Or, you know, Empire Strikes Back had a re-release, and plenty of people have never seen that on the big screen, so they went to see that on the big screen. But I don't think many people are just going to see what's on, surely.
I think there'll be a degree of some, but who knows? I think it is a film that is very much a big screen experience, but I would emphasise but only go, obviously, if you feel safe. Because obviously there's been a lot of talk about the pressure of Tenet, see it in cinemas, but it's an individual opinion at the end of the day, and whether someone feels comfortable going or not. But I think if you do go see it on IMAX if you can, because it's just so beautiful to look at. So beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are going to be a lot of people who will go, well, if you haven't been to the cinema yet, this is why you should go back to the cinema. You have to go back to the cinema to support films like Tenet and The Ambition and all of that. And I don't feel that way. You know, for starters, I don't think Tenet is that once in a lifetime thing that's going to make you do that anyway. But I absolutely, as you said, I think it's all personal choice at the moment. I think if you don't feel like going back to the cinema, you shouldn't. I don't feel like you should be pressured. Like, certainly, again, we were talking just before this, and I was saying about, in fact, I was saying just a minute ago about whether I want to go back and see this again. And I do, but a big question mark of it is I don't want to go to a cinema where there's loads and loads of people there, because I am still really worried about this whole situation. And so, you know, we are very lucky as critics that we were able to see it in such
very
a privileged lucky. Situation.
Very, very lucky.
Where we were able to see it in an almost empty room on the most incredible screen and projection system we could
very,
possibly
very
ask
clean,
for.
And like, they ensured you wore your face mask throughout and everything, and yeah, very safe. I'm not going to do like star ratings, but let's do it. Let's do how many Nolans out of Nolans when we're talking about five Nolans. Tom, would you give this movie?
Oh, I'm really conflicted. Like, you know, my head says three and my heart says four situation, I think. If you really pushed me, I think I'd go four.
Also, this is, I feel that also I can't form 100% a full opinion until I've seen it again. Which I don't know if you feel that as well.
Yeah. I'm always a bit resistant to that, because while I do think that's true, and I do think that, you know, your true opinion on a film crystallises once you've seen it a few times, I think one of the things is that you have to go on how a film makes you feel that first time. Because most of the time, you know, most films you review, for example, you're not going to see them more than once.
This is very
And
true.
So I feel like you have to... Yeah, so I feel like you have to kind of go off that. Oh, absolutely, your opinion might change on, you know, multiple watches. So I may have mentioned this when I was last on. But when I went to see The Dark Knight Rises, having not particularly loved The Dark Knight, I came out of The Dark Knight Rises and went, oh my God, that was incredible. Five stars, all the stars. Find more stars to give to him. And then I watched it again 6 months later and I went, ah, it was okay, quite like that. Yeah. Probably four stars now. And I saw it again another 6 months later and I went, that's a bit of a mess. It's probably three stars.
It got worse
and so
as you got along.
My opinion, you know, my opinion on Dark Knight Rises has gone down every time I've watched it. So I've stopped watching it.
yeah. Otherwise, it's just going to go really low. I was going to make a joke that obviously you can't give it 3.5 because you'll be cutting Nolan in half. And yeah.
Yes.
So you don't want to do that to the famed director.
Yeah. But no, if as I say, if you pushed me, it's four. But I do have reservations about that
so
four.
So I just edge into five. Because I do have a couple of reservations, but they're nothing like too major. So, and I was so blown away, and I was like, whoa, that I would still class it as an outstanding cinematic experience, if that makes sense. So
it's certainly an experience. Whatever else it is, it's definitely
an
experience.
Saying that, it's probably one of my least favourite movies of his. And which is, like, this is the thing about me and Chris Nolan, is I love all his work. And I think only one of his films is four star and that's Following, which is fair enough. It's a student movie, you know. So by saying it's one of my least favourites doesn't mean it's bad in any way. It's just he's so bloody good, isn't he? But I would, if I was doing a ranking, it would be in the bottom half. Not at the bottom,
yeah,
but in that bit. But that's just my personal take.
I think I agree with you. I like Nolan on a whole a lot less than you do. And I'd probably have this quite comfortable in mid-table.
Mid-table, yeah. I don't think it's top-tier Nolan at all.
No.
But I still was bloody impressed, Tom.
but it is the most Nolan.
Yeah, it's the most Nolan, but not top tier Nolan, which seems like a paradox, which is very appropriate for this movie.
Very appropriate, yeah.
Well, normally I end a podcast on asking you whether you're excited to see Tenet, but you've seen it. So.
Oh, the format collapses.
The format's collapsed, and now I don't know how to end it. No, I do. Thank you very much for joining me today. It's been fun chatting about Tenet. I think the next episode...
It has.
Next episode, I think
we've done quite well.
I actually think we have, especially since it's now 50 minutes long and not all.
And we haven't spoiled anything.
We haven't spoiled anything. And also, it wasn't just 50 minutes of me banging on about how hot Robert Pattinson is. So, which is an achievement.
That's the next episode.
But the next episode is going to be so hard because that's going to be the spoiler special where me and my friend Chris Rogers will be talking about it in spoilery. And I'm already frightened.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck, guys. Rather you than me.
But thank you for joining us. Where can people, I suppose, see more of your work and follow you on social media?
Yes, so you can follow me on Twitter at Tom J. Beasley, which is B-E-A-S-L-E-Y. And again, I will have said this last time, I have absolutely no qualms about self-promotion. And so pretty much everything I write will be ruthlessly promoted on that Twitter feed, so you will be able to keep up with everything, including my review of Tenet.
Yes, and I will share your review on the Knowing Me, Knowing You Twitter as well. So if people want to read your review as well as hear it on this podcast, they can do so.
It's going to be no more coherent than I was on this podcast, so...
That's just the way nobody likes it, though. Oh, thank you very much for coming on today. That was me and film journalist Tom Beasley reviewing Tenet. Keep your eyes peeled for next episode. Don't forget to subscribe, follow us on Twitter at KnowingMeKnowingYou, and feel free to get in touch too with any feedback. See you next time.